One second.
I'm good.
We're gonna we're recording these and putting them online freely available for people for the speaker things, just so people know. Look for more information, illinoisna.org.
Okay, so now we're going to introduce the speaker. The speaker is Laura M., but Mary's gonna come up and introduce. Welcome, Mary.
Hey, family. This is awesome, but it's scary, you know, just so y'all know. I've known Laura almost my whole time I've been in recovery, and I've been blessed to be her sponsor. She's somebody who works steps. When she's got a dilemma, she calls her sponsor. She puts out that she works the steps in every area of her life.
Your mouth. People are having trouble hearing you.
Sorry, guys. But so this lady works an awesome program, and what it shows when you get to meet her and get to know her, you get to hear her, the beauty that comes from this program and how we can build into it. Just awesome people. This is an awesome person who works these steps and lives this program. With that, I give you Laura M. Come on in. All are welcome, right?
That's right.
I'm Laura, and I'm a grateful recovering addict.
Hey, Laura.
Hi. And I am from the Chicagoland region, and I'm from the north suburbs down in the Chicagoland region, a little town called Park Ridge. So I have been part of a lot of different areas, and you know what? I got clean in an area called Near West Suburbs. And and I got my tribe here, and I feel connected, and I'm grateful. So before I begin, and I'm trying not to, you know, sweat, stutter, and all that other stuff, because you know what, I'm human, and being human gives us human qualities, and one is being nervous. So, okay, so I want to do a moment of silence for the addict who still suffers inside and outside the fellowship. So a moment of silence. Thank you, everyone. You know, there's, just to get into some quick statistics, I don't know if you've heard the news, but you know, there was a statistic from August of last year till August of this year, and over 100,000 people in the U.S. lost their lives to the opioid overdose. And I don't know about you, but that's a whole lot of people. And that's documented. So take that statistic and see how many people were not part of that record, that statistic. How many more of us died as a result of not getting the message of recovery, not getting to hear a Narcotics Anonymous message. So I want to let you guys know, we have this coins we get every year, and on it it says God Self-Service Society. Mm-hmm. How are we giving back to our fellowship? How are we helping further our primary purpose to the still suffering addict? How are we doing it? Because service is our responsibility. And I don't want to get up here and preach, but let me tell you, I don't want to lose another member. I don't want to bury another member. You know, our fellowship we've gone through crisis because of a pandemic. You know, and I want to say we survived. I don't know about you, but who surrendered today? Raise your hands. I did. Okay, now put those hands up, and I'm just going to do a little exercise. I'm going to put the mic down for a moment, but I'm going to try to speak loud. So take those hands, take that right hand, and put it on your left shoulder, and your left hand on your right shoulder. Squeeze hard, because that is a hug from me to you. So if I give you anything today, I'm going to give you a little bit of love to go home with.
Okay.
So, and you know what? And it just, my heart, you know what? This is where I learn to not only give love and receive love, to have that capacity to be able to do that without expecting anything in return. So in our Living Clean book, if I can get to it as I fumble, there's just a passage here, and it says, the spirit of love that we express in NA is the most powerful thing we have. The basic text describes it as the flow of life energy from one person to another. We see this action when we watch an addict come back to life in the rooms. Oh, God. The hugs are an instrumental part of our method and our experience. NA is all about love. And let me tell you, when I came into my very first meeting, I went in this basement, and I'm like, what is going on in that basement? Something magic happened there. The diversity is our strength. Diversity is our strength. I was the only white female in that basement. But let me tell you, I never felt more loved in my life. And I remember I would try to always leave when I go to the meeting. I try to duck out before the group hug. Because, I didn't want to be touched. I didn't know how to be touched. All I knew is when I came here to the fellowship, I was shot at, spit on, raped. The list just goes on. And I didn't want to be touched because I didn't trust anybody. But you know what? There was this guy, I don't think he's around anymore, Marvin. Marvin grabbed me and he goes, Laura, you need some love and I'm not going to let you go. And he wouldn't let me go and they held me and after the meeting they gave me a hug. And that was probably one of the hardest things about COVID is not getting those hugs, not getting that affection, not getting that, don't get me wrong, we are resourceful people doing the most, we'll say the most magical things in these rooms, getting on a computer and making meetings happen when we can't meet because we're in lockdown, and trying to find the most resourceful ways to come together, to be connected. We've done such amazing things, but it's nothing like an in-person meeting, getting a hug, and sharing some time together, and learning how to live in this world that still confuses so many of us. And I'll tell you a little bit about some experience. But I've come to a point in my life where I've been clean longer than I used. And that's a miracle right there. But I grew up in the suburbs. My parents divorced when I was 4. I had an older brother. I was a latchkey kid. I learned to table surf at an early age. You guys know what table surfing is?
Tell us.
Okay, it's when your parents have a party and you get to try all the colorful drinks. Okay, so I learned to table surf at an early age, and I learned that, that was good. I learned how to climb up to the top of the fridge and find things that I shouldn't have got, and it was good. I learned I liked excitement. I was an adrenaline junkie. I liked to, never sleep. I didn't like to sleep because I didn't want to miss out on a thing. So, I can tell you, my drug of choice was make me feel good and give me more. I just wanted more. I could tell you going into high school, I tried this pink thing, this brown thing, this black thing, and you know what? I just wanted more. But one thing is, I wanted to stay awake. I wanted to stay awake because I didn't want to miss a thing. Oh, and the theme, the masks gotta go. I used them all. They don't work. I can't be skinny enough, pretty enough, tall enough, short enough. I tried to. I remember the day I asked myself, "Would you die to be skinny?" Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? It was like my addiction took on a launch pad. And it was just like, I made that decision. I was on a mission of death. And I don't know about you, but today I want to live. I want to live, and I want to live clean. And I don't want to have anything steal me from my mind. I don't want, you know, this thinking disease tells me I'm not good enough. And I'm just, you know what, today, this is God's perfection. This is God, if I criticize me, I'm criticizing God's work. And all I do is my best, just my best. And, you know, God builds us with our own individual idiosyncrasies that makes us perfect in our own right. We are God's creation. I don't want to say God, good orderly direction, higher power, whatever you choose to call it, loving and caring, greater than me. And there isn't a day that goes by where I don't get on my knees and thank God for another day clean. And that, yeah, I seen along the way, I didn't see it as I was going through it, but as I learned to write on some steps, I saw that there was a higher power watching out for me all along the way. I saw that map so clear through my step writing, I'm like, I should have been dead. You know, you don't get shot at and it just missed you by an inch. You just don't find yourself in places where it's like, oh my God, we're just on a stroll. We're just on a stroll. How'd I get here? How'd I get out of here? You know, or, you know, I knew that it was either the drugs or the lifestyle. The lifestyle was going to kill me. The people I was associating with, you know, they were not so nice people, but I wasn't so nice either. So, but, the year before I got clean, I'm just going to kind of jump into recovery because, you know, recovery is a miracle, total miracle. So I tried to get clean on my own before I came to the fellowship. I probably needed the fellowship when I was 16. And you know what? All you guys that do H&I, keep doing it. You know, this is a great way of going into our treatment centers. A lot of people are like, repeat in there. So please, let them know. You know, keep going into H&I. And if you've never done an H&I meeting, get involved. You know, because it's a great way to give back. It's a great way to see people just getting the first exposure to Narcotics Anonymous. So I was, from age of 19 to 20, I was... kind of like, instead of table surfing, I was couch surfing, because I remember when I was 19, my mom told me, I love you, but we can't live together anymore. I said, but mom, one thing I left out is my mother is one of us too, but she thanked me, because now she knows where to go if she has a problem. So, and you know, so she is one of us. She's come here, and she's the same person that told me that we can't live together. So I guess I was not doing some good things. And I moved with my friend, and then my cousin, and then I just was like, can I just move back home with my dad? And I remember it was like 2 weeks before Christmas, and he let me come back home, and I said, I'm going to do this thing right now. And I sat on that couch for 2 weeks with the sweats, the shits, the whatever came out of me. I just sat there, and I said, I'm just sick. I'm going to get through this. And my dad said, maybe you should see a doctor. No, I'm going to get through this. And you know what? I guess I didn't realize all the stuff. I don't even know half the shit I took, because I was just like, it was just like going from one scene to the next scene, and what is this? Oh, make me feel good and give me more. Because, you know what? I just wanted to be anywhere but here. And you know what? When I get to my dad's, I'm like, well, let me go the church route. You know, and I'm like, okay. And then let me go, you know, another guy, you know, because shortly after I moved in with my dad, I was engaged to a guy I was with for 5 years, and he fell out of it was a horrible, horrible thing. He died as a result of his addiction, but he fell out of it was in 19 stories up down at a Holiday Inn downtown Chicago, and it was very horrible. It was my first love, and I thought we break up. I thought, you know, we were going to have kids together, and, you know, it was like that dream was shattered, and it was never going to happen. And then I get involved with somebody else, because I had to keep masking the pain. Mm-hmm. I had to keep, you know, overlapping the relationships because I was, the feelings, the fucking feelings. And I'm sorry, I don't want to swear, I'm way beyond swearing, but you know what? The feelings drove me to, it drove me to my knees. And how do you get through these feelings? You know, I know in recovery, I write about it, I pray about it, and I share about it. And you know what? And we get through it. Before recovery, it was like, find another guy. Mm-hmm. So I found the sickest guy. He was a couple years younger than me. And in the community I was in, his family was pretty prominent. And he was a local dealer, and it just was like, okay, supply taken care of, then let's live life. And then welcome to the world of, you know, dealing with it was a blackout drunk. And I remember there was a situation where it was like, he hurt me. He physically hurt me. And there was, I remember there was a situation where I was in the hot spot, it was being monitored, and he had just hurt me, and I was trying to go meet him to get something, and I got caught up in the situation, and the police said, you know where you were? And I'm like, yeah. And I said, well, I was just trying to get some stuff back, because this guy, he just hurt me really bad, and he's threatening me, and I'm just trying to get away from him, but I had to get some stuff from him. So they said, okay, well, we can help you if you help us. And I was just like, how can you help me? His family is prominent. And they said, don't worry about it. And it was like an angel that came in. And you know what? And I became a state's witness, and I ended up having him put in jail. And it was during one of the hurricanes, so his parents were in another state, and he was there for a while. It was horrific looking back at it, because I put myself in a really horrible situation where I could have ended up dead. And I did this quite often. And I'm like, why do I keep falling down by mistake? When am I going to learn my lesson? And you know what? He's decided to go to treatment. I ended up at his, you know, visiting, because they didn't want... Actually, let me back up, because I tried to to visit him in treatment before he went into incarcerated. But I tried to make it work, and it just wasn't. But one thing I want to mention about when he was in treatment is there was he was at a facility in the city. And H&I came into his treatment center, and I was there from the family meeting in the overlap of the H&I. And H&I said I could stay for that meeting. And I just, this is important because, you know, sometimes we're going in to share a message, and we don't know sometimes who is hearing that message. But it was the first time I heard of Narcotics Anonymous, and they told me I could stay there. And I listened, and I said, wow. Whoa, where do I go? And then speed up. Then it was just like he started threatening me. He was going to kill me, and then he ended up in jail. So I started going to these other meetings geared towards codependency, because I wasn't as bad as he was.
Yeah.
I wasn't. So I'm like, but maybe I can save him. And so what I did is I went to these meetings, I got a sponsor, I started working steps, and I'm like working with my sponsor, and I remember she said, we're going to meet for breakfast. And I said, breakfast? And she said, yeah, we're gonna meet for breakfast. I said, I don't eat breakfast. She said, well, you do now. And I remember having this oatmeal. That's all I remember. But you know what? And I remember sharing about that first step. And I'm like trying to get out about being powerless over the addict. And I'm going, I was just like, I don't know if I was, I'm like hyperventilating. Listen, I'm an addict. I can't be powerless over anybody because I'm the addict. And she's like, well, so am I. And I said, what are you doing here? I'm like, do you think the disease of addiction just stops at, you know, this disease affects every area of our lives. Every area of our lives. It's a thinking disease. It's the drugs that got us here.
Yeah.
But let me tell you, once you get here, enjoy the ride. Yeah. Okay, so that sponsor, I love her to death. And she said, what are you doing this weekend? I said, I don't know. She goes, well, we're going to go to this convention. So I like, okay, my first exposure to it was a Midcoast convention in Davenport, Iowa, on the Mississippi. And it was, I'm like, we get there, and I'm going, where's everybody? And I was profoundly amused that there was a gambling boat right there, and most of them were there. So I'm like, all I could think of, she goes, everybody, you know, recovers in their own way, but whatever gets them here. So, you know what? I went in there. I got to stand up for some clean time. When I started going to that codependency fellowship and sweated my ass off on my dad's couch, I wasn't, for some magical reason, I don't want to say it was magical. It was definitely some good orderly direction. Because I was going to meetings every day.
Wow.
And I was not picking up every day. And I went to that Midcoast convention and being able to stand up for some clean time. I have never earned anything in my life. But I earned some clean time. And I remember that Sunday I got home and that was... It's like all these little, you know, like miracles. It's like I get to this meeting in that basement, and her ex-husband, Michael Sponsor's ex-husband, was chairing the meeting. And like I said, I was the only white female there, but I got the hugs, I got the love, and I got everything I needed there. And I got a meeting directory. This is the one I got at my second meeting. But I got my meeting directory, you know, and I picked up some pamphlets. And I, you know, I remember doing Am I an Addict? When you can check most of it, you know you're in the right place. And, you know, and one thing I was told is bring your tools to your meeting. Bring your tools to your meeting and utilize your tools. You know, because they're not going to do anything sitting on a shelf. Yeah. You know, this is a program of change. Change happens through the steps. And as I started working those steps, I got to build a relationship with myself, higher power. And you know what? That's where the magic began. And that, for the first time in my life, I didn't want to die. I realized I was there was no mistake that got me there. You know, it was definitely a divine intervention because there were so many times where I should have been dead. There were so many times where I near-death experiences, driving. Oh, my God, I shouldn't have been here, but I'm here. So I was told get a service position. I think I got my first service position. They elected me to be a GSR at 4 months. They gave me money and told me to hold on to it and don't spend it. Okay? They told me I got to read the group announcements, and I had them all in orderly fashion, and they were so perfect. And I was like, and I'm like, I remember that mask I wore. When masks gotta go, I would come in dressed to the meetings in the tents, because you know what? I was so scared. I hid. There was a little girl inside. This little girl, I came to the fellowship 22. At 22, back in 1992. And I just said, okay, whatever it takes. Because I don't want to die. Mm-hmm. And I just kept going to the meeting. I did a 90 and 90. I did more than a 90 and 90 that first year. Because you know what? I just didn't want to use. And I just took one position, and I did another service position, and when I got 6 months clean, I started doing H&I. I did it in an adolescent treatment facility because I knew I needed help when I was an adolescent. And it was not available to me. I had never heard of 12-step fellowships back then. And you know what? Half the time, that H&I meeting was on lockdown. And you know what? I still showed up for my commitment. And I said, let them know we're here. We'll see you next week. And it was a weekly H&I meeting. So, and I came every week, and I did that for almost 2 years. And so from there, I just kept going to meetings. And, you know, one thing, speeding up to, I say, stay out of relationships for the first year of your recovery. I say, work all 12 steps, then think about a relationship. That's me. That's just me. Because you know what? For me, I needed to gain a relationship with myself, and the way I needed to do that was through working the 12 steps. But when I got that here, year and a day, I met my ex-husband. What I have left of that are two beautiful children. And you know what? I've raised them myself mostly. And I'm very proud, you know. And so I went through a lot of trials and tribulations. You know, being involved with another recovering addict was hard. It was hard. But it was a learning experience. And it made me stronger. Today I'm a woman. Today I am not only a survivor of where I came from, because suffering from sexual abuse, suffering from physical abuse, you know, mental abuse, and that relationship was as sick as you can even imagine. Because, you know, it's I had an old member say it's like two garbage trucks trucking down the road. Because you know what? If I'm not cleaning up my side of the street, I'm probably trying to clean up your side too.
Wow.
And you know what? But I gotta admit that, because today I really try to stay in my lane. And you know what? And when you're doing service work, it really helps you keep you in your own lane. So, you know, so that's what I've done for the last 29 and a half years, is I've stayed plugged in with service. And I've never been without a service commitment. So, just speeding up, that ex-husband, I also went through a 5.5-year custody battle with him, and I won custody of my kids. I did also, you know, get, I came in with a career. I got a license, you know, the state of Illinois gave me a license to practice real estate. I get to hold a lot more money. But you know what? And that taught me a lot, because NA gave me the tools to be able to take on that professional career. And that professional career gave me the tools to come back and do leadership service work. And you know what? I owe my life to Narcotics Anonymous. I owe my life. And today in my recovery, I do a lot of service work. And today, I through the years, as you're aging in recovery, you know, we get things called health issues. We get things called, you know, diseases that have nothing to do with the disease of addiction, but it sure plays on the disease of addiction. You know, I've had 5 back surgeries and staying clean through the process. 5 back surgeries. I always wondered if it was it the autoimmune disease I developed, or was that very bad altercation with that old boyfriend? And I can't sit and figure it out, but one thing I know is together, with all of you, we can get through anything together.
That's right, that's right.
Okay, and, oh yeah.
That's right.
And you know what, each surgery I went through, I had recovering addicts. I had my tribe with me all along the way. And you know what? You can go through surgeries and you can stay clean. And it requires asking for help.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know what? There were some times where I didn't think I'd be able to walk, and I'm walking. There were times where I didn't think I'd be able to get out of my house. I'm out of my house. And because I have the availability to do service work, I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. And so over the past, I'm just going to go into, you know, over the past 3 years, I've had the honor of being the hospitals and institutions public relations chair for the Chicagoland region. I'm like, that's a lot of words. Yeah. And you know what? It has been the most life-changing experience for my recovery. Because you know what? It also got me to learn a lot about the traditions and the concepts. Oh my God. You know, what a concept, right? So I got to learn how to have better relationships with members. How to work effectively in our service committees. How to, you know, what I say? Say what I mean what I say, and don't say it mean, because you're not going to be on my step. And I'm not sure, I'm not going to do a ninth step. If I have to, I will. You know? But you know what? It better be a pretty damn good reason. But there have been times where I've just said, you know what? I don't want to be mean. I just don't want to be mean. That's not who I am today. The old Laura would say, go F yourself. The Laura today says, you know what? I want to just hug you. And you know what it's like to go up to somebody that you know was an asshole to you and just say, I think you need a hug. I think you need, you know what it's like? It's like humble pie, but you know what? Guess what? I felt amazing that I was able to give that hug. And to do service work with some real egomaniacs. You know, egomaniacs, the acronyms, edging God out. Every one of us are in our process. You know what? We got to stick around to see how the process unfolds, because I've seen some real sick members get real better. Real better. You know, I can tell you my first area meeting, I watched a fight break out. And you know what? Today this guy is in my tribe. He's one of my closest friends. And you know what? It's cool, because we're all in process.
That's right.
And you know what? I'm so grateful that people didn't give up on me. And I'll tell you, if Patty would have told me 29 years ago I'd be sitting here speaking for you guys, I would have said, hell no, no, not me. Or even, you know, these two ladies have changed my life and helped me selflessly, and all of you, in your own way, your own right, have helped me along the way, and I hope that I've touched you all along the way too. And you know, today in my recovery, it's still about balance. You know, today I'm still trying to achieve that level of balance. So that means I need to continue writing on steps. I need to keep working on my traditions, and I need to keep embracing those concepts. And this is where the change can happen. And that means I need to continue to stay plugged in. I'm not perfect. I don't know, did you guys read the JFT today? It's about perfection.
Awesome. Yeah.
Okay, I am not perfect. I am by far not perfect. And you know what, I've read other fellowship, you know, literature where it says we strive to be perfect. I said, oh my God. Okay, I would never put down another fellowship, but today I just want to be better. I just want to be better, because you know what, that perfection will lead me to die.
Yes.
It'll beat me down and just make me want to grab another mask. Yeah. And put it on. Yeah. And just show me that, you know what, I'll tell you. This past week, I was like talking to another member. I'm like,
I'm so busy, I don't know what to do, I need to prepare it, and I want to go shop, I want to go shop. Ladies, can we, you know? Okay. And I'm like, she goes, God's got this, girl. And I'm sitting going, no, God, no. And I think I even started crying because I'm like, but you know what, today I can tell on myself. And I can say, you know what, first thought's still wrong.
Right. Yep.
And you know what? And we just do our best. And you know what? I'm not going to lie to you. This ain't easy. But let me tell you, it ain't as hard as going and copping for the next one. No. And today, I wouldn't give up my seat for the world. And not to mention, how many of us didn't make it through this pandemic?
Wow.
Where are they?
Yeah.
Where are they? And I remember coming back to my first in-person meeting going, we survived! I felt like we were in a freaking war. We survived! You know, and I'm like, you know, and I got my mask on, and I'm immunocompromised. I'm like, well, don't get too close. And so I put my mask on, and I remember going to my first in-person meeting going, I didn't care if I got COVID because I felt like I was going to die if I didn't get my ass to a meeting.
Yeah.
So I was like at that point where, and this is not going to take me out.
This
is not going to take me out. So I got to a meeting and you know what? I masked up personal responsibility. I did my part to protect myself. And it's, you know, I learned how to be good to Laura, being clean. I learned how to have personal responsibility for my own health. And I learned that by other, okay, there's this saying, you know, I'm just going to put it through this way. The women in the fellowship taught me how to become a woman. The men have really helped too. But it's the women that you know, I really, you know, taught me how to be a woman. So I am truly grateful. You know, I'm sure there is so much more I can share, and I hope I didn't, you know, I hope, if anything, I hope I gave you guys some love.
You did. Yeah.
I gave you some love, I gave you, and you know, just I want to see if there is one more thing I can share with you guys that is, okay. There is no model of the recovering addict. When the drugs go and the addict works the program, wonderful things happen.
Yep.
Lost dreams awaken and new possibilities arise. Oh, I got goosebumps. So I love each and every one of you. And the committee, thank you for allowing me to share my experience, strength, and hope. And Joe, thank you. And I'm truly grateful and blessed.
All right.
Thank you.